Power to the people. Everybody come in. Everybody please. Gather in a circle. Kind of like out this way. And then that way we'll be standing in front of the monument here. I'm so glad to see all of you on such short notice. This has been a very intense year of activity for the People's Organization for Progress. Can y'all come up? Come up this way. Come up. Don't stand behind. Yeah.
Don't stand behind the monument.
Right. Stand like along this way. Yeah. There you go. Up, up, up. There you go. There you go. In fact, if y'all would get between, right in along there, right there, yep.
There you go. There you go. Sorry.
There we are. We in good shape now. As I was saying, this was an intense year of activity for the People's Organization for Progress. So sometimes we don't have the time to do as much preparation as we would like, but we try to get the word out as best we can. But you all should put it in your collective memory that July 12th of every year, you can be sure that the People's Organization for Progress will commemorate the 1967 rebellion. This year, power to the people. This year marks the 41st anniversary of the Newark rebellions. And it probably marks, this might be the 25th commemoration of the People's Organization for Progress of the 1967 Newark rebellions. In fact, one of the first things we did when we formed our organization, one of our first activities, was in fact to commemorate the struggle that broke out in this city in 1967. Because many of us, some of us that are standing here and some that are not standing here, many of us are children of that era. I was 12 years old in 1967, and some of you were about the same age. And that was a transfiguring experience for us. That was the thing that forced us to discuss issues that we might not have otherwise been discussing at that time. And it was the beginning, it was a seminal event in the development of our political consciousness. So we come here today to remember those who perished. Some of their names are here on this monument that was erected here by the city of Newark after the urging of people of the Central Ward. Some of the people who perished, their names are not here, because there's some varying opinion on exactly how many perished in 1967, but we do know that many perished and thousands were wounded, and we do know for a fact that just about everybody that was shot to death either by the police, the state police, or the National Guard that occupied the city at that time. And I'm so glad that the family members of some of those, the family members of some of those who perished in the rebellion are here with us today, family and friends. And at this point, why don't we all salute and have a moment of silence in remember of the 1967 rebellion, and in remembrance of those who perished, and in observance of the fact, most of all, that the struggle continues, that the struggle that began in 1967 did not end in 1967, that struggle goes on today. And would you keep your hands raised while we read what's inscribed on the monument here? And then after we read the names that are inscribed on the monument, we'll ask the children to come forward, and if not children, those of you who have brought flowers, you can come forward and put the flowers here at the monument. What's inscribed on this monument, it states, commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Newark Riot of 1967. We will forever remember the names of those whose lives were lost. And those names are Rose Abraham, Elizabeth Artis, Tita Bell, Leroy Boyd, Rebecca Brown, Mary Helen Campbell, Rufus Council, William Furr, Hattie Gaynor, Raymond Gilmer, Isaac Harrison, Rufus Hawk, Oscar Hill, Jesse Mae Jones, Robert Martin, Albert Messier, thank you, Captain Michael Moran, Eddie Moss, Cornelius Murray, Michael Pugh, James Rutledge, Victor Lewis Smith, James Sanders, Eloise Spellman, Richard Talaferro, and Detective Fred Toto. And it says, dedicated by the residents of the city of Newark, July 11th, 1997. Let us bow our heads for a moment of silence. And while we're silent, we're going to ask if there are any children that want to lay the flowers at the monument. You can do so at this time. He doesn't waste no time, did he?
This is the grandson of Eloise Spellman.
This is the grandson of Eloise Spellman, who was killed in 1967. Yes. All right. All right, everybody can lower their hands. I want to thank you all for coming out. And I want to give voice first and foremost to the family members of those who perished. And you can just take the mic one after the other, introduce yourself, and then talk about what happened to your loved one in 1967. We have, I'm going to ask first to speak.
Pamela
Spellman, the daughter of Eloise Spellman. Give her a hand.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming out. My mom, Eloise Spellman, she was gunned down. I'm one of 11 children. My mother was gunned down in her apartment at 322 Huntington Street on the 10th floor. At the time, I was 9 years old, but I'll never forget. I have memories, very bad memories of it. And there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't miss my mom. My heart goes out to everyone that lost someone to tragedy. The memory never dies. It goes on. Birthdays, her birthday, Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas. It's not a second in my life that I don't miss my mom, that I think about her. And like I said, I'd like to thank everyone for coming out and supporting this, because this is history. This is something that never fades, never goes away.
Hello, my name is Ann Penn. I'd like to say to everybody, thank you for being here to honor these people that passed. My brother, Albert Messier, was shot in the head, although they said in the newspaper he was shot in the back for stealing. There was nothing in front of him but blood. So these things you don't forget. These things you'll never forget. And it seems like it doesn't stop. It's like there's a license to kill. There's no shoot to stop, no shoot in the leg, no shoot nowhere, shoot in the head, or shoot 15 or 20 times to kill whoever, man, child, or woman. And it needs to stop, even though some of our own children are killing each other, but it's terrible out here. So whoever wants to speak now, here's the mic.
Excuse me, Arthur, it's kind of mean for me today. First of all, I want to thank you all. And my heart bleeds for the Spelman girls. Let me explain to you and tell you the reason why. My mother, I was 17 when this happened. My mother lost her mind. I had to raise my 11 siblings and sisters and brothers. But I do believe in my heart that if the Spelman girls had had their mother in a wheelchair in a zombified state where they could have washed her face, gave her a bath, fed her, fixed something for her to eat, it would have hurt, but it wouldn't have hurt as bad with her not being here at all. That's number two. Now, number three. My mother made me get her some promises when she went away from here in 1998, and I'm going to do that. I'm a caregiver for a handicapped brother. I like to run away from here a couple months ago, but I'm halfway all right now, but she wants my brother's body resumed out of the Woodland Cemetery, and I paid a lot of money to put her body in Fairmont. And the city of Newark don't let me do it, I'm going to Oprah. And if Oprah don't seem to get me any headway, I myself going to take a shovel, because I don't feel if they can say no cause for indictment when they shot my brother 39 times in the body, 21 times in the leg, and 19 times in the head. It don't take that many bullets to kill an elephant. Now, when Tom Hayden came to my mother's house when I was 17 years old, sat down in her living room and said, "Miss Rutledge, you can make a difference at the grand jury." My mother refused. She said, "Mr. Hayden, I got 11 siblings left, and I tend to keep all 11 of them. Now, let me explain to y'all what that's all about. I was cooking when the mailman ran the next day, and I heard my mother holler, "Ooh, Jesus, and fall, and hit the floor, and listen." I ran to see what happened. My baby brother shot past me. He had something in his hand, but I didn't see it. So anyway, when I went in there, she was laying on the floor, foaming at the mouth, shaking, with a letter in her hand. It said, "If you want to see this again, and let me tell you what my baby brother had." But he went in the backyard. There was an abandoned well, and that well, you could see a little hole where you could go down in the mud, in the water. He poked a picture of my brother's body on a slab, laying in an upright position, with just something covering his private parts, with all those bullet holes, and I later saw a copy of that. And that's what my mother saw. And it said, "If you want to see this again, speak." Thank you all.
Thank you. Any other folks who lost family members?
Oh, my brother was James Rutledge.
James Rutledge, yes. Anyone else lost family members?
I didn't have anyone that I lost, but I do have an experience that I want.
Okay, let's just make sure that all the family members have spoken. That want to speak.
Yes,
now we're going to ask Newark, people who were Newark residents at that time. Anybody want to speak? Who were Newark residents at that time? Yes, come forward. Talk about what happened to you in 1967.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm still a Newark resident. At the time, I was 13 years of age. My name is Roberta Singletary. At the time, I was 13 years of age. I remember certain things as a kid, just not being able to go to school that day for some reason. My mother worked at Deluxe Topper. If you remember parents, they worked at Rimco, different toy factories. They used to come to Springfield Avenue to catch the bus to go to Elizabeth. My mother came out of Springfield Avenue and Jacob and turned right and saw all the tanks coming up Springfield Avenue. And she just simply said, "This is one day that I cannot go to work." And she returned home. And there she stayed. They told her if she leaves the town to get on the bus, she will not be able to get back to Newark. So we as children remained at home for weeks until it was safe to go outside. And that was my experience of the 1967 riots. And thank you for the opportunity to share that.
All right. Any other Newark residents? Newark residents at that time. Newark resident at that time. Come on. Talk about 1967.
I'm Brad Ringo. In 1967, it was a tragic day, not only for the citizens, but for all Newark residents. The time of the ride, I remember where we couldn't go outside until 4 or 5 o'clock when the food wagons come to feed us, and then you had to go right back to your house. They pick a certain time to feed people. And there was a lot of shooting. You seen it on the news, Newark was on lockdown, and across the city was on lockdown. And it's a shame that we have to go through such a turmoil to change Newark into a better city, but it happened. So we as a people must unite today and try not to let this tragedy happen again to all our brothers and sisters that we lost along the way. In society, they have prevention in the political field, and we need to hold our elected officials accountable. Thank you for allowing me to share that.
Thank you, Brad. Carolyn Kelly Shabazz.
Thank you so much. I remember vividly coming up 17th Avenue from downtown on that day in 1967. I was with Honey Ward, Morris Parker. These are old timers. Urban Turner's crew. As we came up to the top of the hill, we saw Tim Still standing on top of the banister, I would call it, by the precinct, telling people to go back, trying to get people to be quiet. That must have been somewhere around 2:30, 3 o'clock that afternoon. I dare tell you, by 6 o'clock that evening, the blood was running up and down Springfield Avenue like it was water. But more important was who was putting the blood there. It was the state troopers. We know for a fact, and I am living witness, that they said to us, if in fact you put soul sister or soul brother on your window, you'd be safe. So through blood, through liquor bottles, through garbage cans, through people in the ground that we were trying to help to get to Beth Israel Hospital, they were turning us away. We turned back, we come to the University of Medicine and Dentistry. If they were black, they were turning us away again. It was like war. For them to say, by any way, shape, form, or fashion, that it was just just somebody got angry. No. This was war, and we had to fight for our lives. So some of us put Soul Sister on our windows. I managed to get all the way from 17th Avenue to Pomona Avenue. Well, I put Soul Sister on my window. Managed to get back over here to Springfield Avenue. As a matter of fact, there was a furniture store, children's furniture store, right on one of these corners. And some of the sisters had been just cut to pieces, ribbons, with the glass that had fallen down from that building. And as it turned out, we thought that we could be over here fighting, helping the sisters and brothers, trying to help the children, trying to help get the Spellman family down out of the projects, because Morris Park and Tim Still, they knew those buildings like they knew the back of their hands. So did Honey Ward, Morris Parker, Jelly Williams, Noah Williams, Noah Marshall. Only to find out anything that had Soul Sister on it was shot down too. In fact, we were shot down first. So although that was in 1967, sisters and brothers, and this is 2008, please be sure that the only difference is the technology that they use. We have to understand that 67 is alive and well. And I can only thank Allah that Brother Lawrence Ham is the kind of strong brother that he is. I can only thank Allah God that his memory and his commitment to the lives that were lost and to the generations that are going to be lost because of 1967, that he would stand here and wage this battle here today. And although you might see just a few here, this band represents thousands. So it is incumbent upon us to really, really, really get behind this brother, get behind Brother Zaid Muhammad, and do what is necessary to be done. So the 67, that's the only way 67 won't happen again. Thank you. Men love you.
Mr. Calvin Kelly, thank you. I'm going to ask Professor Max Herman, who's been doing some serious study on the 67 Rebellion, to say a few words. Give him a hand.
Thank you. I've known my friend Ann Penn for the last 7 years. Maurice Abraham is not here today. His mother was killed back then. You're absolutely right about the state police coming through and targeting the stores that said Soul Brother or Soul Sister on them. I've been coming here now for the last 5 years, and maybe 6 years. I've lost count at this point. I don't really have much to say other than today happens to be the Sabbath, and in the Jewish tradition, we mark the yard site, the day of mourning for the people who have died, and I would like to read the mourner's Kaddish. Yiskadal v'yit kadash shemei rabah v'alma divra kirusei yamlich malchusei v'kayechon u'yomekom u'kaye b'kol v'Yisrael v'agala u'vizman kariv v'imru amen yisparak v'yishtabak v'yispar v'roman v'yitnase v'yishardar v'yithale v'yishhalal Shemei Dekudsha Briku, Leila Minko Birkosa Bishirata Tushbekata Vinechamata Damiran Bealma Vimru Amen. Iheshlama Rabba Minshamaya Vakain Elenu Vekol Yisrael Vimru Amen. Ose Shalom Vimru Mav Huya Se Shalom Elenu Vekol Yisrael Vimru Amen. In honor of those who died.
Thank you very much. Any other folks from the neighborhood want to speak? Yes, come on. Say your name.
Excuse me. Hi, my name is Darnella Lee, and I was born and raised in North. My mother, we're from Hayes Homes. Mm. When she was talking about old time, as you might know, her name is Elaine Harton, Mr. Harton. I wasn't actually a part of the riot, but I was running with my mother in my stomach. I was born in 1967. She was running with me in the stomach and had my other sister on the hip. And I always said to her, why was you running? She said, we was trying to get away. We was running. People was running in and out of the stores. They was taking stuff. I was running. She said, we was all running. They was trying to hurt us. Everybody was just running and getting out of there. I said, you was running? She said, yeah. What I say about 1967, because I was in her stomach and I didn't know much. But back then, from what I hear, what I know, people stood for something. They didn't just fall for anything. Because I was in her stomach, today I am a riot. I don't just stand for something. I mean, I don't fall for anything, I stand for something. And that's what we got to do today to keep the progress. We got to stand for something and not just fall for anything. Thank you.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Yes.
Come on, Pat. Pat Clark. From Newark.
Last name.
What is it?
That's not the street.
Oh.
That's one thing you didn't do was get the last name. I couldn't go get any wine to pour some for the brothers. But if you can all pray, close your eyes, envision a young man, a black man or woman with a smile, dreams, no money, no way out, but a lot of dreams. Temptations, Supremes, Terrells, Linda Jones. As the Sister Shabazz says, the brother councilman that has long since passed, whom I obviously forgot his name, but Brother Ward, George Branch, Irvin Turner still, they paid the price. They put the stones down for you to walk upon. If you can smell fish at $1.25, chicken wings for $1, horse and buggy, 2 pounds of peaches, for I think it was 50 cents. The pawn shop was right here on the corner, Newt's Tavern, down the street, the National Theater. 1,000 people walking up and down, getting ready on Friday night for Saturday morning, Diamond in the Back, sunroof top, wide straw hat, platform shoes, sticky, hot streets, filthy, with a snow cone in their hand, the brothers using drugs. You could see your face in their shoes. They were so clean. Brother Malcolm was on South Orange Avenue. We had black businesses because we had black people. Now we don't have black people. We have Negroes, so we have no black business. So the blood, their blood running down the street, the blood don't sign my name. I'm gonna keep it pushing, keep it moving in silence, but educate your children, and please let them know that if Obama get in, he'll be the fifth black president. We had five black presidents before George Washington. George Washington helped assassinate the last black Moorish American president. So there's nothing historical about him. I just wanted to continue to do a little preaching in front of you brothers here, because each one of these names had stories. When they sat around singing doo-wop on the porch with crushed ice and wine and a little grapefruit juice. Power to the people.
Power to the people. I'm going to ask our Vice Chairwoman, Sister Debbie Strong, who is the current resident of Newark, to come and say a few words, maybe relate this to what's going on right now. Give her a hand, Debbie Strong, Vice Chairwoman of the People's Organization for Progress.
All right.
Bow to the people. I was also a resident of Newark, I still am, during the 67. And every year I come, I've been coming to the commemorations of that time. And every year I try to remember what was I doing on that day. The only thing I can remember is that we were watching television and the news suddenly flashed that there was a riot on Springfield Avenue. People were running everywhere. Guns were being shot. People were being hurt, and they said something about a taxi cab driver and a little boy and all kinds of things, and I was very afraid. I can remember that much. After that, I don't remember much. And I keep finding that very strange. You know, they say that when you go through a certain trauma sometimes, a trauma, and you block things out, it's not done intentionally, but it's a protection, a self-protection that God has given us. Because sometimes the trauma that you go through, you don't need to remember every single bit of it, because you could hurt yourself. You could hurt yourself because you'll stay there. So I offer my condolences to the families, and I'm very proud of their descendants that are here, that are able to move on and tell us their stories about what happened. And it just saddens my heart, because it's not much different today. And I've heard everybody saying that, you know, 67, 2007, 2008, 40 years, 41 years. Not much has changed, except, as the sister said, the technology. And that's what we have to remember too, that the struggle continues. The struggle is not going to stop because and if we get a black president, and people have to be mindful of that. So I just wanted to say that we have to continue to educate our children, educate the ones behind us, educate ourselves, because believe it or not, there's a lot that we need to upgrade with our own selves. And we have to remember that there's always going to be a struggle, because anytime we're trying to move forward, every time we take 10 steps forward, somebody puts something in the way and try to push us back. So that's what this government is doing now. It's trying to desensitize our young people, desensitize us, you know, trying to tell us all the bad things are good, you know, and try to make us believe it. Although some of us know, or we could make the difference between, differentiate between what's Hollywood and what's for real. But if you're a young person and all you've been seeing is Hollywood, to you, that's your reality. That's your reality. And we have to put a better reality in front of our children. Because they're the ones that's going to be here and have to deal with all of this other stuff that's coming our way. In a better way, and hopefully in a stronger way, in a more powerful way than we've been able to deal with it. Because what's coming at them is gonna be more powerful. The technology that's being used. If you've been reading your newspapers and keeping up with the news, you can't sue the telephone companies because they're bugging your phones for what the government calls something that they have to investigate. Oh, you may be a target, terrorist. They like those words, terrorism. In 67, we were terrorized. We're being terrorized today, too. And we can't forget that. You see these signs that says, we will never forget? Well, there's another we will never forget they want to keep in your mind, which we shouldn't forget. But this one, we need to push it ourselves. We will never forget what happened in 1967 here in these streets of Newark, New Jersey. It was not a riot. It was a rebellion. And that is something we have to remember and keep pushing. Power to the people.
This is Debbie Strong. Give her a hand. I'm going to ask Brother Zaid Muhammad from the New Black Panther Party to come and say a few words.
I'm going to ask you people, but I want people to come close and learn to say some things that I think that some of which have been said already, but something happened.
Sister Shabazz, I would love for you to stand with me, Mother. A very strong warrior who's still trying to bring our community together. Where's Sister Shackford, right? Just some things need to be revisited. Right? Brother Steve, let somebody hold that because there's some dots I want to. Some things I want to tie together. Brother Steve is your chairman from Plainfield, New Jersey, and a serious organizer, raising hell. Stand with me, Brother Steve. First, Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
All power to the people. Brother and sister, this rebellion was the birth of Black Power in this part of the country in a very real way. On your streets, in your time, people who you know, some of whom have held the mantle like this beautiful sister to my right and this strong brother to my left, and a whole lot who have betrayed it. That's one of the reasons why this town looks like this today. Right? We need to say, but I just want to just go back down memory lane. I was not quite six. You can picture my crazy behind at 6 years old. Ironically, my dearest Andrew, I was in East Orange on Central Avenue. There was a store on Central Avenue in South Clinton. There was a Geno's at that time. I was trying to get me a Geno's Giant with my little 99 cent that I borrowed from my nana, right? And as I'm eating this Geno's Giant, I'm watching tanks that I'm used to seeing in old TV war movies rolling down Central Avenue into Newark. Into Newark. And those tanks were real. They were not movie made. And those tanks came and provided destructive cover for the police riot that took place in the aftermath of the rebellion. Now let me break down what I'm saying. On the shoulder squarely of Sister Debbie Strong, your vice chairman, where she at? Right? Come over here with me, Queen. Right? Strong black woman. You got good talent in the People's Organization for Progress. Debbie was right. Bring that poster over here, Brad. That poster belongs here with the people right now. What happened amongst our people, sick and tired of the abuse, of police authority in this town was in fact a rebellion. And it was not just a rock thrown at the precinct, as history tries to tell the story. There were all kinds of elements in this town organizing, trying to make power real in this town at the time. What happened on this day back then was an accelerant to take it to the next level. But in the immediate aftermath, the Newark police, the state police, and you had police officers and battalions from all over New Jersey came into this town and shot it to pieces. I said, here's our chance to get some niggas. I know you don't like me talking like that, but look, her mother was in the window trying to pull one of her babies down from senseless fire. She wasn't shooting from the window. She was trying to protect her babies from them shooting out the window. Let's get the record straight. If somebody's going to use the term riot to describe it right here, the rioters were the police. The rioters were the state. The rioters were the other side. And as a consequence, almost all of these casualties are on our side. Now, I'm trying to tie some things together. Because, see, I'm originally from Plainfield. I came to Newark later. Steve and I live in Plainfield.
All right.
Sisters and brothers in Plainfield looked at how the police went buck wild on our lives in Newark and said, you know what? When we do these crackers, we're going to do a little different. First, we go, you'll appreciate this, Sister Shabbat. First, we're going to take out some liquor stores. Huh? We're going to take out some liquor stores. There's too much toxicity in our community. I'm talking about where I'm from. And as soon as they did that, there was a rifle factory on the West End. That within a moment's notice got cleaned out. I said they got cleaned out. The underground knew what to do back then. They babies out here don't know what they're doing. Now they're shooting each other. The underground can stop police brutality. I'm telling you, I'll say it in front of anybody, including any police out here. The underground can make that stop. You got the weapons. Well, if we had those weapons in 67, that would have been different. I'm serious. But when they cleaned out that rifle factory in Plainfield, the police did not come into Plainfield the way they came to New York. You know why? Because they knew the stones would come up on both sides. And the only casualty in the Plainfield Rebellion was on their side. A pig named Gleason, who just got finished stomping and shooting a brother in the street by himself, thinking that there was going to be no consequence. May he rest in peace. I said, may he rest in peace. So for all my elders, Sister Shabazz, Baba Miriam, Mama Mina, I want y'all with me right now. I need y'all here. Because y'all were part of this. Y'all right on time. This elder here, who put black power, who gave it direction, far beyond some of the people who get all the credit for it, got his skull cracked by Newark police, who tried to deny him medical treatment, hoping that he would have died, just like they tried to deny it all over. You gotta remember what happened here. Sadly, as it is, because that struggle was betrayed, that ain't being taught properly in our schools. So our babies ain't getting this right. And the only people they're getting it from is people like you and me. So don't think that what you and I are doing is insignificant. It's cold serious. In fact, because it's not happening where it's supposed to, under black control and black leadership, punk dancing, bootlicking, compromising up of times, what we're doing is more important than it's ever been. So listen, family. Last year, we said several things should have happened coming out of that rebellion and coming out of all these anniversaries and commemorations. One, when we took power in the early 70s, first thing should have been happening was have been the Civilian Review Board. Newark should have led the way. It was betrayed. As soon as the Negro got there, he turned the police on the people. Amiria tell it, I'm gonna let him tell it. But that's what happened. And here you are 40 years later, you still don't have one. Still don't have one. So when there are calls made to support the effort that was initiated, and you ain't heard nothing in a minute from that, by West Ward Councilman Ronald Rice Jr., you need to be a part of that. You need to sweat those Negroes, every last one of them who are in City Hall now. And when it comes time to put it on the line, we want an all-elected civilian review board. We want community control of the police. You want to stop police brutality? These are things you have to do. These are the kinds of things that you have to do. And Newark should have led the way, and unfortunately, it's not too late. The other thing is this. Everybody talked about he was worse. Let me tell you this. He was worse than the Amadou Diallo and the Sean Bell or the Newark Rebellion. When that brother was taken out, they had him in a room by himself. They thought he was by himself. There was another brother hiding out that told the story. And put that brother on his knees. Several of Newark's finest, and said, "We got one. Record is clear." And shot that brother to pieces. So, saying this to say this, it didn't stop. That brother was hit 39 times, over a dozen in the head. God. Amadou Diallo was shot at 42 times, hit 19. They weren't up on him like that. They were just firing. Sean Bell was in a car. Sean Bell 50 times. 50 times. And people continue to get away with it.
You're right.
This what we're doing is been too small in its impact.
You're right.
And it has definitely got to change, and they need.
Yes.
Body's gonna fall, they need to fall on the other side, I'm telling
you. You're right.
We're gonna either stop this on an upright, so-called legal way. I'm telling all the babies out here in all these sets, y'all wanna stop police brutality? You have the power in your hand on several fronts.
All right.
We'll close with a story. St. Petersburg, Florida, 1996. Young man, maybe about 25 years old, college educated, good job, driving a nice car home. Car too nice for several police officers who felt that this young man looked like he had too nice a car to be driving in and probably making too much money to be making for a young black man who's certainly making more money than them. And out of their racist, jealous rage, they put that man's hands on his steering wheel and shot him to pieces, just like they do. Still talking about police brutality, right? That's the trigger for the Newark Rebellion. But some things happen in the aftermath that are instructive for my babies on the streets that's locked and loaded. There's a chance for them to do something that they may not recognize, and I want them to hear this. Several weeks later, when the organizers put the posters of the corrupt, racist, killer police that did this all over the town and went to a building, something like that, put all the evidence out in front of the people, guess what the St. Petersburg police did? They went in that building like they did Hayes Home and all these other projects around here in 67. They came out shooting like crazy. Tear gas and live fire, 1996. But then something strange happened that they didn't prepare for, that they couldn't have expected in a million years. All those heads and those sets that you discount in these streets out here today, that are caught up in a cycle of violence that's got our babies going out of here in a crazy, sick, heartbreaking way. They looked and they saw the police firing in that building and they said, "You know what? My aunt's in that building. You know what? My mama's in that building. You know what? My brother's in that building." And all of a sudden, St. Petersburg police found themselves under fire. These were little Saturday night specials these young boys are popping with today. All this stuff that they're using, that they've taken each other out in grand style, they seized the time in the language of Bobby Seale. And they said the helicopter was needed to provide cover for the police as they were scattering, going right and left in every other direction. They had enough hardware to take the helicopter down. The record is clear. And St. Petersburg has not had a problem with police brutality of that kind since. I hope you find something, all y'all that can hear me, within the earshot of this, that got something that you know you need to do something right with if you're going to ever have to use it.
All right.
Understand me.
All right.
We want police brutality to stop.
All right.
And I will dare say, regardless of the consequences from wherever they come, that some of us want it to stop by any means necessary.
All right.
And there are more means out here in 2008 than there were in 1967.
All right.
Teach, brother, teach.
So if y'all want to stop it, old Pat says seize the time. I said seize the time because we do want to stop it.
Right.
No more bodies like this. City needs to clean this park up. City needs to be here. Clowns that they are. I said clowns that they are. I know some of y'all voted for them Negroes down there. You're supposed to. It gives you more right to raise hell on their behinds when they sell you out.
Right.
And you should be practicing for this next Negro they're going to put in Washington.
Right.
And we all going to support him. Going to give him a chance. As soon as he starts buck dancing, throw rocks at his behind.
All right.
I said throw rocks at his behind.
Yeah.
No more sellers.
That's right.
All right. Thank you, Brother Zahid Muhammad. Give him a big hand. I want to call next a brother that was here in 1967 and provided leadership to our community and still provides leadership, revolutionary leadership to our community. Brother Amiri Baraka, give him a big hand. Brother Amiri Baraka. Then we're going to hear from Sister Amina and then we're going to close out.
I want to just say 1967, people were fighting for power.
That's right.
Black power. And we have to see that all the stuff we went through, we got rid of the amnesios and the straight out white racists. Then we had to learn about the white racist Negroes, which is another step upward, but still. And I say that because you had to find out it wasn't just about skin color that made oppression. It was a question of class struggle, you know, and as long as there is poor black people, there's gonna be class oppression on us. And since most of us is poor, you know, that's the way it's gonna be. So, we have to see that the whole period in the 60s and the 70s was actually a struggle for power, black power, and that we raised it to a certain level, but we should have learned from that. You know, the minute after we put Gibson in there, they had 12 police come in our house with pointing guns at my wife and kids, saying that we was up on the third floor torturing police. Actually, wasn't up on the third floor torturing police, but it was a good story. But the point is, you have to make step by step by step. There's no such thing as magic revolution. You cannot just make revolution because you want it in your mind. You have to do the hardcore organizing and step by step. So now that we have these Negroes, and see, talking about what Gibson did, a Negro in there now, who's now a more educated white racist Negro. You know, he, Cory Booker, Stanford University, him and Condoleezza, same place. Yale Law School, you understand, he's a Rhodes Scholar. You know what I mean? You know, and he was the president of the Oxford University Jewish Students Organization, if you can get that in your head. So now he's come over here to help us. See, but he ain't come over here to help us, he came over here to serve us to the people he's helping. You understand what I'm saying? So just like we have to see this Obama thing as the same thing. We're just going up to another level. See, whatever you do and whatever you say, please don't let McCain get in there. That's all I got to say about that. You understand? We can kick Booker's ass all we want to do, but we must get rid of McCain. I hope you hear that.
Yeah.
It's like 1932 in Germany. You know about that? Study that. The Weimar, the last democratic republic in Germany. The communists and the social democrats got to fighting, that is the left and the near left, got to fighting, and Hitler got in the middle of that. See, Hitler was elected legally. See, Bush got in with two stolen elections. Hitler wasn't getting in there legally. So we have to, whatever we do, let us set our minds on it. We got this man here harassing my wife and children, this Booker. He doesn't stop razzing, pull him out the car with a light in his face. He doesn't stop Amity Jr. and give him a ticket for having a tinted window. My wife got stopped on the street for not having a sticker, which she had on her car. The little boy, he got locked up. I had to get him out, and the indictment was for wandering. You hip to wandering? Say he was wandering in a neighborhood where they sold drugs. That could be all of Newark, actually. Where can you go today selling drugs in Newark? You could go in City Hall selling drugs. So, it's got to that wandering. I said, man, that's a deep charge. You have to look that one up, you know. So that's where we at. We be careful what you wish for.
That's right. All right.
See, because it's not gonna stop your struggle. You understand? It's gonna be a higher level of struggle, but it's still gonna be a struggle. And when Obama get in there, it's still gonna be a struggle. But we now should be putting together a block of people saying, no, you shouldn't do that. No, you shouldn't do that. No, you shouldn't do that. We're going to support you because we can't support this mumbling, lobotomous Vietnam veteran because he thinks he's still in Vietnam. You understand? You want to put us back in Vietnam. Yeah. So we have to stop that. But struggle ain't going to stop. Struggle ain't going to stop. And as long as you remember that, unity and struggle. Then we can go on to the next level. Thank you very much.
Give America Rock a big hand. Power to the people. We're going to hear from his wife and a leader in our community, Sister Amina Baraka. Give her a big hand. Now, y'all can't get her too excited. She's just recovering from a stroke. So she here, give her a double big hand for being here.
Thank you. I think he said just about everything I would say. I just want to quote Malcolm a little bit. You have to be careful what you call a revolution. Because that movie they made called Revolution 67, it should have been called Rebellion 67. The people rebelled. There was no revolution. Yes, there was a change, but we don't know if it was a good one or not. So when people talk about change, make sure that you understand what change really is and make sure you know what revolution is. And be careful how you use the word. I thank you very much.
Give a big hand, Sister Amina Baraka. Sharon, you wanted to say something real quick. Gene, you want to say something real quick, and then we're going to close out.
Okay. I'm not a Newark resident. I was raised in Orange and Montclair. But my grandmother lived on Warren Street in Newark, and I had two cousins who lived on 18th Avenue. On that day, in 1967, my cousins and I were in, and our mothers were in Wildwood. And time to come home, we were not able to come home because my uncle said that the streets were closed, couldn't get in Newark, and we were stuck in Wildwood. Lo and behold, my uncle came down a few days later, drove my aunt and my cousins home, and my mother had to drive home by herself with us. My grandmother, when we got home, she told us that she had to lay on the floor because of the bullets that were coming through her tailor shop. She owned a tailor. And so my grandmother and my grandfather were laying on the floor trying to keep well. This must never happen again. And we have to stop killing ourselves. Our children need to stop killing each other. They are our future, and we have to do something about this.
Thank you, Sharon. Jean, quick announcement.
Northern State Prison is in Newark. Not all of the killing these days is out on the street where you can see the blood on the streets. It's behind the prison walls. Yesterday, I spent a few hours with a young man who had the print of a correction officer's boot on his back and broken ribs at Northern State Prison. 2.3 million of our people are behind bars or under prison custody in one form or another in this country. I just don't want us to forget that struggle. On December 19th, 2007, almost 80 people who were in their cells not posing a danger to anyone, were beaten up at Northern State Prison in Newark. We got to look behind those walls. We got to go behind those walls. We got to demand accountability from the Department of Corrections, which runs those prisons in which our young people are confined. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean. I just want to announce before we break that there will be, Mary Baraka asked me to announce that there will be a jazz music festival on Friday, July 25th at 12 noon. He is the host, and there will be performances by the James Moody Quartet featuring Cyrus Chestnut, John Lee and Dennis Mackerel, T.S. Monk Band with special guest Allison Williams. So everybody try and make that. And this is going to be at Lincoln Park. This is the Lincoln Park Coast Cultural District 3rd Annual Music Festival, Friday, July 25th. 12 noon, all right? I want to thank everybody for coming out today. I've also been asked to announce a community cookout today at 12 o'clock at 188 Irvin Turner Boulevard. Everyone's invited. This is sponsored by the Friends and Nobles of the Golconda Temple, number 24. So please try and make that. Thank you. Power to the people. I want to thank everybody for coming out today. One thing we have to keep in mind is that the Newark Rebellion was one of more than 1,000 urban uprisings that took place between 1960 and 1970. I mean, think about this. This is why we call it a rebellion. If it had been one city or two cities on different coasts of the country, it had been a disturbance. It had been a riot. Between 1960 and 1971, there were 1,000 rebellions. The year 1967, when the Newark Rebellion took place, there were 163 separate uprisings in 163 cities that year. Between 1968, the year that Dr. King was killed, and 1971, there were 400 rebellions. Many people don't know that there was a second rebellion in Newark in 1968 that was put down. And in fact, there was a unity march of more than 30,000 people. And Harry Belafonte was part of that march in 1968. You want to talk about struggle? Newark was the seat, not only of oppression, but the seat of struggle. In 1966, the first Black Power Conference took place in Newark. In 1967, a second Black Power Convention was held in Newark. In 1968, there was another Black Power Convention right there. In that building right there, West Kinney Junior High School, was a Black Power Convention in 1968. Just up the hill in Lower Central Ward, they call it Clinton Hill. That's Wilbur Carnegie's district. Clinton Place Junior High School was where the Black and Puerto Rican Convention took place. And that's where Ken Gibson, Sharp James, Dennis Westbrooks, and others came out of that convention and eventually took their part, their places on the City Council of Newark in 1970. But none of these people wouldn't have been elected if it had not been for the rebellion in 1967. It probably would have been 10 more years of oppression under Adonisio had there not been a rebellion and an uprising. One of the reasons people rose up was because they were tearing down the Black community. One of the reasons was for the rebellion was the University of Medicine and Dentistry. They cleaned out acres of the Black community to build that school. And then another reason they didn't want to put Essex County College down here, they wanted to put it up there in Livingston. And all these highways running through Newark, they weren't there in 1967. Route 78 wasn't there. They ran all these highways through Newark so that they could get the troops down here quicker when y'all rose up in rebellion. This city has been a seat of rebellion, and it's incumbent upon us
to make it a hotbed of rebellion again. If you think there's any other lesser goal, then you shouldn't be in the People's Organization for Progress. And the struggle is going to be more difficult in the years to come. You see, they passed these regulations now. The FBI can spy on anybody, take you in. There's no more habeas corpus. There's no more, they don't have to give you a reason why they're holding you. They put you in a secret prison somewhere. They got secret prisons all over. Guantanamo is public. You know about Guantanamo. They got other prisons all over where they can detain you. But no matter what they do, they can't stop the struggle. Where there's oppression, there's resistance. And we're going to keep fighting. And I call upon the members of the People's Organization for Progress and all the comrades and all the other organizations to really put our minds to the task of how we're going to rebuild this movement, how we're going to build up the People's Organizations, POP and other organizations represented here today, and how those organizations are going to work together to build a movement. I don't know that I'll ever see social transformation. We used to talk about social transformation. We used to talk about revolution. I don't know that I'll ever see the revolution. But what I do want to see is the struggle. I do want to see the sparks and the smoke and the fire. I do want to see us moving collectively and fighting together like they're doing down there in Plainfield. They thought they could just take the hospital out of Plainfield and nobody would say anything. But they didn't know there was a man down there named Steve Hatcher and that there was an organization down there called the Plainfield Branch of the People's Organization for Progress. They thought they could just torture somebody to death up there in Orange, New Jersey. But they didn't know at that time that there was a family called the Faison Williams family. And there was a father named Earl Williams. And that there was an organization named the People's Organization for Progress. And they thought that they would just walk away from that. But the five police that tortured Faison to death, they're in the jail right now. And that's what we got to do. We got to continue to fight. To stay on the front line, to build this struggle for change, for justice, for peace, for freedom, so that Brother Rutledge will not have died in vain, so that Sister Spellman will not have died in vain. That's why we have to continue to fight, brothers and sisters. So thank you all for coming out today. We will meet Thursday, 6:30, at the Abyssinian Baptist Church, 224 West Kinney Street in Newark, right down here. And again, the connection, you saw Mac, Professor Max Herman, he read the Jewish prayer. Did you know that Abyssinia was a Jewish temple at one time?
There's a few of them in this town.
That you knew that, didn't you? Abyssinia was formerly a Jewish temple. And their temple was sold to that congregation that's there now. And they renamed that temple Abyssinia Baptist Church. You see that street down there, Prince Street? You talk about segregation. It wasn't just in the South. Segregation was right here in Newark. Apartheid was right here in Newark. You couldn't go down on Bradford Place and put a hat on in the hat store down there. You couldn't change clothes in Bamberger's down there. I don't remember going downtown until I was almost 10 years old. We shot right down here on Prince Street. You know, in Newark, they had segregated movie theaters. Black people could only sit in the balcony. We couldn't sit in the mezzanine. And this precinct over here, the 17th precinct, what got the riot started, that precinct was notorious for killing black people. That's why they thought Smith, the cab driver, they thought he was dead. When he went in there and didn't come back out, people thought he was dead. And they went over there and demonstrated, and that's what sparked the riot. But that precinct, the 17th precinct, was notorious for police brutality. If you went in there, you didn't come back out. So we got to continue this fight, brothers and sisters. Continue that. All of you who are standing here today who are not part of an organization, you need to join the organization. Because you can't do much struggling by you. You can do a little bit, but you can't do a whole lot of struggle by yourself. You got to join the organization. Join one of these organizations out here. There's a bunch of them out here. And brothers like Amiri Baraka, we need to hold that brother up. Hold him up. Right. Next month? Richard just told me next month is the anniversary of the Black Power demonstration by John Carlos and Tommy Smith.
You remember that in 1968? They held their hands up. All right. Well, brothers and sisters, thank you for coming out today. Go in peace. Come to the meeting on Thursday? Thursday. All right. Thank you. Power to the people.